St. Mary of the Angels is more than just a church. It's a monument. It's huge. Its dome, rising to 17 stories and covered in every kind of accessory you could name, including angelic statues spread over the roof and ledges. You could get a lot of people arguing over exactly what it's a monument to, I suppose. But one cannot see the church without being impressed by its size, by its artistry, by its beauty. In a city of architectural mastery, St. Mary of the Angels need bow its head to no one. That said, the back of the place, the delivery doors, looked quite modestly functional. We went there, Charity driving her family's minivan, Thomas, me, and Mouse in Madrigal's battered rental van. Mouse and I got out. Thomas didn't. I frowned at him. "I'm going to find some place to park this," he said, "just in case Madrigal decides to report it as stolen or something." "Think he'll make trouble for us?" I asked. "Not face to face," Thomas said, his voice confident. "He's more jackal than wolf." "Look on the bright side," I said. "Maybe the scarecrow turned around and got him." Thomas sighed. "Keep dreaming. He's a greasy little rat, but he survives." He looked up at the church and then said, "I'll keep an eye on things from out here. Come on out when you're done." I got it. Thomas didn't want to enter holy ground. As a vampire of the White Court, he was as close to human as vampires got, and as far as I knew, holy objects had never inconvenienced him. So this wasn't about supernatural allergies, it was about his perceptions. Thomas didn't want to go into the church because he wasn't optimistic that the Almighty and his institutions would smile on him. Like me, he favored maintaining a low profile with regards to matters temporal. And if he had gone back to older patterns, doing what came naturally to his predator's nature, it might incline him to stay off the theological radar. Worse, entering such a place as the church might force him to face his choices, to question them, to be confronted with the fact that the road he'd chosen kept getting darker and further from the light. I knew how he felt. I hadn't been in a church since I'd smacked my hand down on Lashiel's ancient silver coin. Hell, I had a freaking fallen angel in my head, or at least a facsimile of one. If that wasn't a squirt of lemon juice in God's eye, I didn't know what was. But I had a job to do. "Be careful," I told him quietly. "Call Murphy. Tell her what's up." "You'd better get some rest soon, Harry," he replied. "You don't look good." "I never look good," I said. I offered him my fist. He rapped my knuckles gently with his own. I nodded and walked over to knock on the delivery doors while he drove off in Madrigal's van. I'd taken my duster back once Daniel had a blanket on him. Screw the heat, I wanted the protection. Its familiar weight on my shoulders and motion against my legs were reassuring. Fort Hill answered my knock, fully dressed, the white of his clerical collar easily seen in the night. His bright blue eyes looked around the parking lot once, and he hurried toward the van without a word being exchanged. I followed him. Fort Hill moved briskly, and we unloaded the van, Alicia shepherding the mobile kids indoors while he and Charity carried Daniel in between them. I followed with the two little wet dish rags, trying to keep my tired muscles from shaking too obviously. Fort Hill led us to the storage room that sometimes doubled as refugee housing. There were half a dozen folded cots against one wall, and another one already opened, set out, and occupied by a lump under a blanket. Fort Hill and Charity got the wounded Daniel onto a cot first, and then opened the rest of them. We deposited tired children on them. "What happened?" Fort Hill asked, his voice quiet and calm. I didn't want to hear Charity talk about it. "Got a cramp," I told him. "Need to walk it off. Come find me when Daniel gets coherent." "Very well," Charity said. Fort Hill looked back and forth between us, frowning. Mouse rose with a grunt of effort to limp after me. "No, boy. Stay and keep an eye on the kid." Mouse settled down again, almost gratefully. I beat it and started walking. It didn't matter where. There were too many things flying around in my head. I just walked. Motion wasn't a cure, but I was tired enough that it kept the thoughts, the emotions, from drowning me. I walked down hallways and through empty rooms. I wound up in the chapel proper. I've been in smaller stadiums. Gleaming hardwood floors shine over the whole of the chapel. Wooden pews stand in ranks, row upon row upon row, and the altar and nave are gorgeously decorated. It seats more than 1,000 people, including the balcony at the rear of the chapel, and every Sunday they still have to run 8 masses in 4 different languages to fit everyone in. More than size and artistry, though, there is something else about the place that makes it more than simply a building. There's a sense of quiet power there, deep and warm and reassuring. There's peace. I stood for a moment in the vast and empty room and closed my eyes. Right then, I needed all the peace I could get. I drifted through the room, idly admiring it, and wound up in the balcony, all the way at the top, in a dark corner. I leaned my head back against a wall. Lashiel's voice came to me very quietly and sounded odd, sad. "It is beautiful here." I didn't bother to agree. I didn't tell her to get lost. I leaned my head back against the rear wall and closed my eyes.